Okay, we talked last time about Marius and Sulla, and I remember that, all that crazy thing that happened there with those guys, and how one is going for the poor, basically. The others are going for the aristocrats, and one guy overtakes the city. He goes over to the west. The other guy comes in, takes. Oh, it was a mess. This is the kind of thing that's happening. But the biggest thing that we had to deal with was there are a couple of guys that get together and become friends, and they're two of the most massive, towering figures in all of history. Their names are Pompey and Julius Caesar. Pompey and Julius Caesar are two incredibly gifted military generals. Julius Caesar proved just how what an intense military leader he was during his 9 years in Gaul, which are actually France and Belgium today, contemporary France and Belgium. Now, Julius Caesar was a man of incredible bravery. He was a man who he refused a bodyguard. He absolutely refused to have any kind of a bodyguard. And he was a man of incredible bravery in battle, as well as incredibly gifted strategic planner. Now, what we want to do is just talk for a few moments. Let me get my notes together here. We want to talk for a few moments about how his rise to power comes. Now, basically what happens with Caesar is he gets together with two other guys, and these two guys make up what is known in history as the First Triumvirate, and that's point L in your outline. I just had that here. Oh, here it is. Okay, point L in your outline, the First Triumvirate. Now, in 60 BC, a coalition of these three popular leaders were formed to rule Rome. What they do is because they were so... Remember now, nobody is faithful to Rome at this point. Nobody's faithful to the Roman Empire. They're faithful to their general. The army is faithful to their general. Pompey is a great military leader, and he has an army. And that army is intensely devoted to him. They will die for him in battle without question. To save his life and to keep him safe. The same is true of Caesar. So you have what's happening at this time is you have cults of soldiers that are forming around these men and looking to them for leadership. And their allegiance goes with their general. That's the important thing, okay? Now, the problem is that works okay if there's cooperation between the generals, but it's not always going to be that way. So Pompey and Caesar get together with another guy by the name of Crassus, and oh boy, does he have a terrible end. Crassus ends up getting himself in trouble. I believe it was in Syria. He gets in trouble where he gets captured. Oh, let me see if I remember how this happens. He gets captured, and he tells, they capture him. And he tells them, I am Crassus. If you will free me, I will fill up your storehouse with silver and gold or something like this. Crassus is loaded with money. In other words, I'm loaded. Listen, what do you guys want? What's your price? Knock off the silliness. Tell me how much you want. I'll give you the money. I walk. So they said, you like silver, huh? You like gold? They took silver. They took a pot and they melted down a thing of silver and they poured it down his throat. Melted silver, and that's how he died. You love your silver, you love your gold, we'll have your fill of it. That's how he died. Pretty gruesome way to go, huh? You know what, though? I mean, can you think of how valuable this guy was after? Okay, listen. Now, Pompey was elected consul in 70 BC. He had served Sulla. Remember the general Sulla? Sulla and Marius, who had gone back and forth with each other? He had served Sulla as an aristocratic officer in his army. He was instrumental in extending the Roman Empire in the east, and he conquered all the lands to the Euphrates River in the east and to Syria and Palestine in the south, including Jerusalem. Very important. Pompey is very important because he's the guy that conquers Palestine for Rome. And if you know, there's a movie. What is the movie? It's either King of Kings, one of the Lives of the Story of Christ movies. It's either the King of Kings with Jeffrey Hunter, or it's The Greatest Story Ever Told. Maybe that's the one with Maximilian Schell as Jesus. But in one of them, no, I think it's King of Kings. I think it's King of Kings with Jeffrey Hunter. in that show, it starts off by showing how Pompey is going through and conquering Palestine. It begins with that. So you'll have a frame of reference for that. In one of those movies, anyway. But he conquers Palestine, including Jerusalem, in 63 B.C. So you're talking about approximately 60 years before Jesus Christ comes. Christ was born approximately 3 B.C. Okay? Now, when Christ was born 3 years before Christ, you go and figure it out. When he returned to Rome, he had cut a lot of deals with people while he was out there in the East. Okay, he had cut a lot of deals with people. But when he came back to Rome, the Senate refused to approve the arrangements that he'd made in the Eastern Empire or to grant land to his troops and to the poor, which was one thing he was particularly concerned about. So this caused him to be angry with the leadership of Rome. He was also a brilliant military commander by every account. I mean, you're not going to read one historian who is not going to just hail the brilliance of Pompey in battle. There's only one man that he's going to come up against where he is going to fall short. And he is going to die a humiliating death on the beaches of Egypt at the hands of Julius Caesar. So next is Julius Caesar, the second member of the triumvirate. First is Pompey. The second member of the triumvirate, the first triumvirate, is Julius Caesar, who is a nephew of Marius. Okay? Some bells going off here? So we've got both sides like continuing now. But these guys get together and they say, you know what? You're Pompey. I'm Caesar, I'm Julius Caesar, and this guy Crassus has money. Between me, you, and him, we can run Rome. You got a nice army, don't you, Pompey? Yeah, matter of fact, I do. I got a nice army, too. They like me a lot. You know what? We can rule Rome, and they do. They do it effectively. Now, Julius Caesar is the nephew of Marius. He was tall, handsome, intelligent, and a master speaker. He held many important offices in government during his 30s. He was a young man, and he was also a brilliant military officer and is said to have been absolutely fearless, refusing a bodyguard, as we've already said. Now, so the idea is these three men are going to get together. Crassus, the third one, is a wealthy political leader of the middle class. He gained prestige by crushing a revolt of slaves led by Spartacus in Italy in 71 B.C. Anybody know the story of Spartacus? We don't have time to get into it here, but there's a really long, 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 long movie called Spartacus, and it's been newly restored, and it's really good. It's like this as far as historical content, but you know what? Kirk Douglas, and isn't Burt Lancaster in that? Hey, listen, not to be believed. Good movie. But it's not as good as the Alamo. But anyway, let's go on. So these three guys get together. Now, for 7 years, the first triumvirate dominated Roman government. It maneuvered to politically obstruct any effective opposition in the Senate. These guys, listen, what could the Senate do? The Senate has the power to say, no, you can't do that. But who are they going to say no to? The two most powerful armies that exist at the time? You see what I mean? They've got the army behind them. That's the thing. That's the key to understanding Roman Empire history. They've got the armies behind them. And now that, if you got Pompey over here, if the Senate's got Pompey and Caesar's got a big army, at least they've got a shot. Well, we will oppose Caesar. Pompey, you will lead the Roman forces against Caesar. But you know what? They don't have that because these guys have joined together to ensure that they're ruling. Okay? So in 59 B.C., now listen to this. Julius Caesar is given command in 59 B.C. of Gaul. And we told you yesterday that up in Gaul, which is ancient France, or modern-day France and Belgium, it was called Gaul at this time. During this time, he's given a governorship there, but Gaul isn't a part of the Roman Empire yet. He's got to conquer it, is the idea. We want you to go and be our governor up there. Oh, hey, that's a good deal. The only thing is you have to conquer the people who live there and the governments that are already in place. No problem for Julius Caesar. It would have been for others. He was a brilliant military leader. Now, it takes him 9 years. He's actually up there for 9 years, conquering everything in sight. He even crosses the English Channel, and I'm relying on your knowledge of geography now. You know how France juts up? We have, let me see. Okay. Let's show you this really quick. This is very obviously England. And this is Europe over here. This is Spain down here. Comes up like this. Italy comes up like this. Italy's getting funkier every time we do it. This is Greece. And over here is Asia Minor, like this. The Hellespont would be here. Okay, this is enough. Now, oh, and this over here, the Asia Minor would go that way. And then we have a broken line here, and this would be the coast of Palestine down here. Egypt is down here. Now, here is Italy. Here's Italy here.
Eww.
This over here would be Gaul, okay? This is the, not the Portuguese channel, but the English channel. I think it's channel 1 through 12. The English channel, where they just built that massive tunnel. Takes 3 hours to go from England to France now, through that underground tunnel. You know, hey, tell me we haven't arrived. Yeah, and the English hate the French. I used to work with an Englishman that I've never seen such venomous hatred towards any group of people as this guy had toward the French. Bloody French. Don't even talk to me about the French. Oh, my goodness. You've got to be kidding me. The French, come on. You know, you couldn't say anything. And I mean, I was French-Canadian, and because I had a little bit of Canada, because there was a buffer of Canada in between me and France itself, it was like, I can talk to you at least. But you're a bloody Frenchman, and I know it. And I know that if I stick around with you long enough, you will definitely do something bad to me. He had this incredible hatred. But anyway, now they're connected. Julius Caesar crosses. Oh, here's an interesting story, okay? Julius Caesar is here, comes to Gaul, right? Conquering in Gaul. And in 51, if my memory serves me right, 51 B.C., he crosses the English Channel and he lands in England. Now, on the coast over here, there is a tribe of warriors, barbarians, and they're called the Britanni. The Britanni tribe. What Julius Caesar does is he crosses over here and he says he saw some other people over here and he assumed wrongly, because it wasn't true. He assumed that the Britanni tribe, the same people, were over here. And he named this whole island Britain, after the Britanni. But actually, it wasn't the Britanni. There were three groups of people who were basically of Scandinavian descent. They were the Jutes, the Angles, and the Saxons, from which we get, these guys were done in pretty short history, but Anglo-Saxon history. Anytime we talk about Anglo-Saxon culture, we're talking about English history. And also, of course, we are of Anglo-Saxon descent, most of us, because of the, not most of us, I shouldn't say that, but the original settlers on the east coast of America were of Anglo-Saxon descent. Okay? So, a little tidbit there. Okay, so the first triumvirate, we have Pompey, we have Caesar, and we have Crassus, okay? Crassus being the money man. He's the guy, there's always got to be someone to lay out the cash. And Crassus is the guy, okay? Now, he's up here. They give him the governorship, and he goes up and he conquers Gaul. Wrote two incredible volumes called Commentaries on the War. Everything is minutely recorded by Julius Caesar himself. His commentary on the war against the Gauls. So you can get them in any library. They're very famous historical commentaries. Now, while he's there for 9 years, he becomes more and more powerful. The name Julius Caesar, everywhere that it is heard, is hailed. Did you hear what Caesar did? Oh, yes, I know what he did. He came over here, boy. Over to England, boy. And he was really a ruffin. You know, and then the word gets spread down, and next thing you know, in Italy, they're sitting down, and, do you hear what he do? It's unbelievable what he be do. I tell you what, he come down here, he make everybody be sad, he go and he's killing everybody. Oh, he's Julius Caesar, he's something else, that guy, I tell you what right now. So Julius Caesar is becoming a superhero, a super idol among the people everywhere in the world. Well, Caesar's on his second term up there as governor, and guess what he decides? He's coming home. That's not such a bad thing that he's coming home, except for the fact that the Senate is absolutely shaking in their boots at even the sound of it. You know why? Because nobody's as powerful as Julius Caesar right now. He's the most powerful man in the entire world. They're sure of it. And Pompey, recognizing the unbelievable power that Caesar has, sides against Caesar with the Senate. And they send an order to Caesar, an order that no respectable soldier would ever obey. And that is, if you come back to Italy, disband your army. And he says, disband my army? I don't understand. We order you to disband your army. Well, Julius Caesar wasn't afraid of the Senate's command, and he begins a march downward into southerly into Italy. And as he's going down, he's finding out something, that as he's coming through these towns, the towns are opening their doors to him. Banners are coming out of windows. People are, "Hail Caesar! Hail Caesar!" And they're giving him a triumphal entry into Italy, the Italian peninsula. There's a little river in Italy, a little river up there in the north. It's called the Rubicon. Very famous river. And when Julius Caesar crosses the Rubicon, you ought to write that down. Even today, well, actually not so much today, but in my father's day, that was a saying that was still widely used, crossing the Rubicon. Crossing the Rubicon means you've passed the point of no return. When Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon, that meant that he had made a total commitment to coming back into Italy. So crossing the Rubicon is like a saying, you know. When you cross the Rubicon, you've passed the point of no return. There's no turning back, is basically what it means. When he crossed the Rubicon River, he was headed straight for Rome. And you'll never guess what that brave Pompey did. Him and everyone in the Senate ran away. They said, "We're out of here. He's coming back. He hasn't disbanded his army." And they basically all ran away. Julius Caesar comes into the city, and guess what? He is the undisputed king of the world, if you will. Okay? Ignoring the order, I'm on page 2, by the way. Yes?
Is this before or after this triumvirate?
This is after the first triumvirate. In other words, the first triumvirate is made up of Pompey, Caesar, and Crassus. After this, after the triumvirate is made and Caesar is very popular and they're running the country, right? They're running Rome. The Senate sends Caesar to Gaul. He goes for 9 years. During that 9 years, he becomes very popular, comes back down, and Pompey, one of the other triumvirate members, turns against him. You know, I'm not sure, but I believe that Crassus had already been killed at this time. Okay, so it was just Pompey and Caesar. Now, Caesar is going to spend the first, by the way, he's going to spend the first 4 or 5 years of his office chasing Pompey. And it's going to take him a long time before he actually nails down his army, because they're running all over the place. They're running away. And it's going to take him a long time before he actually nails the entire army, but he is going to get Pompey pretty... Pompey gets killed before his army falls, is the way what I'm trying to say. But Pompey will suffer, as I said, a humiliating defeat on the beaches of Egypt, and he will be no more. Okay? Now, I'm on page 2, and under point M, number 3, ignoring the order, Caesar crossed the Rubicon River and returned to Rome. But as he approached the city, Pompey and his senatorial party fled. But each city that Caesar entered opened their gates to him in triumphal welcome. Caesar made himself dictator in 49 BC. He ruled for 5 years and instituted reforms such as A. He granted citizenship to some of Rome's allies in Spain and in Gaul. Okay, while he was up there in Gaul and on the Iberian Peninsula, what the Romans called Iberia, while he was there, he knew certain people who were very loyal to Rome. He made them citizens. Okay? Secondly, he introduced a new and improved calendar of 365 1/4 days imported from Egypt with modifications that he made, known as the Julian calendar. Very, very famous. The calendar before that was off by much, 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 much more time. Now, although it was only off by, I believe it's, what is it? It maybe like a few minutes, don't quote me on it, but a few minutes a year maybe. His calendar was off by a few minutes a year. But because of that, by the time you get into, now I'm really straining my memory. I think it was by the time you get up into like the 13, 14, 1500s in there somewhere, they had lost like 7 days in the calendar. And seasons were beginning to get mixed up. You know what I mean? I mean, there were being problems with the seasons because of the days that they had lost. So they came up with a whole new calendar, the Gregorian calendar, Pope Gregory, which is the one that we use today. Okay? So the Gregorian calendar is only off by a couple of seconds a year. But so he gave a new calendar. Increasing the number of members in the Senate, he filled their ranks with men prepared to follow his orders without question. Hey, piece of cake. You guys are all senators. You all have your own attitude. Okay? Now, by the way, after he makes himself dictator, those who were willing to accept that stayed. Okay? Here's the Senate. Now, we have, say, 15 people in this room. Okay? 15 people are the Senate. Now, he says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make the Senate bigger. And he adds 20 more people into the Senate. But the people that he adds are all in his back pocket. So there's no way that the Senate can pass something that he disagrees with. You get the idea? So although there's a Senate, that's the kind of Senate it is. Okay? It's almost like our Senate today. I feel your pain. I hurt when you hurt. And all right, so watch this. Reducing debts and debts. And providing employment on public construction projects, thus Here's another reform that he did. He reduced debts, providing employment on public construction projects, thus proving himself a friend of the poor. Who's the American counterpart to Julius Caesar? Yes, exactly. New Deal. Stinking parks going up everywhere. Build a bridge, build a dam, build something. Get people working, right? So he's like this is like the New Deal for Rome. Okay, now watch this. When Julius Caesar comes back and declares himself dictator, the Roman Republic is over. And the Roman Empire starts. Because there's an emperor. One emperor. And although he's not really the first Roman emperor, he is, for all practical purposes, he is. Although he doesn't have the title of emperor as yet. That's going to wait. His grandnephew, Augustus. Now, the first 4 years of his reign, as I told you, he was occupied with chasing down Pompey. Pompey suffers a humiliating defeat on an Egyptian beach in 48 BC. It was not until 45 BC that Caesar defeated all of Pompey's armies. So 3 years after Pompey falls, he's still chasing down his armies. And he finally kills him. Now, fearing that Caesar was attempting to make himself a king, and valid argument there, but fearing that he was attempting to make himself king, two of Pompey's supporters, especially Brutus, egged on by Cassius. Okay, now this is in Crassus. Don't get Crassus and Cassius mixed up, because I do it all the time and my students correct me. But Brutus kills on March 15th, 44 BC, Julius Caesar. And Julius Caesar is assassinated. And you know the Ives of March? March 15th is the Ives of March. You ever hear that? Is it Ives or Ides? Ides of March. Ives of March. That's when green things grow on your walls. Watch out for the Ives of March. Ooh, getting itchy just thinking about it. No, the Ides of March, you know, beware the Ides of March. You've heard that before. It's like, you never heard that before? I mean, it's very, very... And matter of fact, a lot of calendars have it right on it. The Ides of March. It means, watch out. On this day, your friend might betray you. That's what it means. The Ides of March mean, look out on this day. Because according to Shakespeare, now Julius, listen, this isn't true, but it is incredible. Because in the play Julius Caesar by Shakespeare, which is one of my favorite Shakespeare plays, I like it so much because the kids can understand it. You can teach that to seventh graders, they'll get it no problem. You can't do that with King Lear or with Hamlet. They're like, but why do he want to kill himself? I don't get it. There's no such thing as a ghost. And, you know, you get questions like that. So anyway, here's the thing. And Julius Caesar, when he gets stabbed, he looks at Brutus and he says, et tu, Brutus. It's what I've always thought of anyway. You know, the kiss in the garden when Jesus comes out and he says, friend. He calls him friend. Like that last beautiful gesture by the Lord Jesus Christ, knowing exactly what's going to... And he says, and then it says that Judas kissed him. And I think I told you before, did I tell you about that? The word kiss is in the emphatic in the Greek. Did I tell you that before? No. Okay. Well, it is. It's in the emphatic in the Greek. It's emphatic. And it means one of two things. Either Judas kissed him repeatedly, or he kissed him passionately. It was a wholesale betrayal. It wasn't a peck on the cheek. It was a... And he walked away. It was emphatic. And then Jesus looks at him, even with tenderness there, And he says, will the Son of Man be betrayed by a kiss? You know, I mean, it's an incredible dynamic that's happening there in the garden. One of the most incredible things in all of, not only in history, but in literature to read. It's like, wow, try to understand that. And Judas was a man who had absolutely turned over his free will, his volition, to the kingdom of hell. And that's why Jesus said at the Last Supper, he said, Judas, what you must do, do it quickly. There was no longer any choice involved. Because when you hand over your volition to Satan on a consistent basis, you become a tool of that kingdom through negative decisions. Okay, now. I think Julius Caesar, you know, you write your own history. You write your own interpretation of history. I think Julius Caesar was a magnificent leader. I think, number one, the reforms that he made in the few years that he was in office set the stage for the Pax Romana. He's not responsible for it, but it set the stage for the Pax Romana is a Latin term that means the Peace of Rome. It's like this. Pax, P-A-X, Romana. And it means the Peace of Rome. And it's a reference to a 200-year peace that was instituted because of the wise administrating abilities of Augustus Caesar, who is going to be the next one to take over after Caesar, okay? But there's some things that have to happen here for us, and we've got to go through them quickly. But I think he was a brilliant military general, and I always love people who are brilliant military generals because, I don't know, I just do. I love somebody who could exhibit that kind of leadership in the most insane conditions of war, to me, is just an incredible thing. That, now, and by the way, you know, that's really what distinguishes the great leaders of the world. And there has to be some virtue in order to make a man be able to be an effective leader on a battleship, battlefield. You know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is this. Adolf Hitler was an imbecile when it came to his personal policies in Germany and in all of his conquered territories, and that's what made him an imbecile on the battlefield. He lost so many battles that he didn't have to lose. All you need is a surface knowledge of World War II to know that that the greatest enemy that beat Hitler was Hitler. Rommel would call in from the front and he'd say, "I have to retreat." Any good general retreats. If you have your men in a battle and you're losing that battle, it's only wise to you retreat, you regroup, and you come up with another strategy. You don't leave your men out there to die if your strategy is unsuccessful. That's just poor military leadership. And no general wins every battle. Now, Rommel would call in from the African front, and he would say, "Listen, we want to... No, there is no withdrawal!" Well, what happened? His men got slaughtered. And then Rommel, if you remember right, Rommel gets himself in some big trouble because he withdraws them anyway. And the little paper hanger didn't like that. Okay, now let's continue. What happens next is an amazing thing. A second triumvirate is formed. Do I have a second triumvirate here? You know why? Because this is a paper on the Roman Republic, and that's part of the empire. You're going to have to listen carefully, folks. Very carefully, because I don't have the paperwork. But I mean, I don't have the paperwork to give you on it, but I do have my notes. Now listen to this carefully. The second triumvirate is made up of three people, and you're going to know two of them. One is Octavius. You all know him. I'm sorry, Octavian. You all know him, right? You ever heard of Octavian before? He becomes Augustus. He becomes Augustus. Octavian, hey, come on in. Octavian is the first one. Second is another one that you're going to know, Mark Antony, right? You know Mark Antony and Cleopatra? Oh, Mark Antony! Oh, Mark! One of the Shakespeare plays I don't like is Cleopatra and Antony and Cleopatra. I don't like that play. I don't. And you know what I even dislike more than that is the one that George Bernard Shaw wrote. Oh, my God. Give me a break. That was so... Can you throw a few more words in there? We're not sleeping quite yet. And then I thought that me should go and me funk and go and thinking all day. And I was going down to Egypt way and to see Cleopatra that day. And oh, God, give me a break. Oh. You know what? You know what she didn't have? Pretty unbelievably, she didn't have looks. Because it's one of the great things about that we do know about history is she really was not that attractive. I'll tell you what, though, she knew how to wrap Mark Antony right around her finger. And not only that, Julius Caesar before her had a fling with her. That I don't know. I don't know if she did or not. Oh, really? I don't know. That I don't know. Okay, let's continue here, though. So we have the second triumvirate. Here's what happens. Immediately, Caesar's dead. Yeah, hold on. Third person? Holy Spirit. No. Okay, listen. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get teleologically on you. Yes, there were three. Lepidus. L-E-P. I-D-U-S. Lepidus. Okay? Now, we're going to run through this rather quickly, okay? Here's what happens. When the first triumvirate obviously gets broken up because Pompey rebels against Julius Caesar, okay? However, when the first triumvirate gets broken up, and Caesar comes back and makes himself emperor, Caesar gets assassinated. Now, the backers of Caesar form another triumvirate. The second triumvirate is made up of three guys who are intensely devoted to Julius Caesar. Okay, so these guys are devoted to Caesar. Now, when this happens, they come up with a plan of how they're going to get Cassius and Brutus, and they finally defeat their armies. Okay, they hunt them down. The second triumvirate defeats the armies of Brutus and Cassius, who had murdered Julius Caesar. Okay, does that make sense? All right. Next, here's what they do. Now, they decide that the two powerful guys in this deal are definitely Mark Antony and Octavian. And they decide that they are going to rule jointly the Roman Empire. And the way they're going to do it is Octavian is basically going to set himself up in the western part, which is Rome. Now, don't get me wrong, this isn't where the Roman Empire splits into east and west. That comes later. That official split comes later with the Byzantine Empire. That's in the time of Constantine in the 300s, and it's way too early for that right now. But there is some sort of a split because what happens is Octavian is going to pretty much stick to the west side, and the east side is going to be taken by Mark Antony. Mark Antony's over here in the east then, okay? And over here in the west is Octavian. Mark Antony, being in the east, gets down to Egypt a little bit, and he meets this dame Cleopatra. Did you hear that song? There's a country song on the radio. Oh, is that unbelievable? It's a song about this girl who, like, every man that she meets ends up leaving her, dumping her, you know? And she's, like, through the whole song, she's saying, like, but it wasn't my fault. He had this problem, and there was something wrong with him here, and there was it's all their fault and not her fault. And then the chorus of the song says, so you can call me Cleopatra, everybody, because I'm the queen of denial. Queen of denial instead of denial. Okay. I apologize for that. Okay, now, let's continue. All right, so here's what happens. He goes goo-goo over Cleo down in Egypt, and he starts going, she says, you know, Mark Antony, I kind of would like to have that little country. And he says, take it, it's yours. You can have it. Now, this is where there's a problem with Octavian. Mark Antony begins giving land to Cleopatra. And they're ruling the Roman Empire jointly. So this doesn't sit well with many people in Rome. You get the idea? Okay? Add to this crazy dynamic that Octavian receives a report that Mark Antony is plotting a wholesale coup against him so that he can be the complete ruler. Well, you know, you all know the story, folks, of what happens. Mark Antony goes to battle with Octavian, and the two navies, this is a great naval battle, the Battle of Actium. Oh, boy. I wish we had time. I'd tell you the whole story. Actium. The Battle of Actium, famous naval battle. I believe it was 31 BC. Octavian wins, decimates Cleopatra and Mark Antony's navy. Okay? Now, they go back. What do they do? Who knows what they do? Anybody? They go back to Egypt and they kill themselves. They commit joint suicide. Yeah, they go back. They go back to Egypt and they're like, "Oh, Mark Antony." I mean, if we're going to believe George Bernard Shaw, it's like, "I think now we should go back to Egypt land and go where the sun is shining all the time, and there we will end our lives once and for all." Oh God! Oh Cleopatra, please don't do this to me. It's tearing my heart asunder. And oh my gosh, it's awful. It is terrible. I don't like George Bernard Shaw, in case you haven't guessed. Overrated. Pygmalion was overrated too. That was Shaw, wasn't it? Pygmalion. Oh gosh. Put me to sleep. I'd rather watch grass grow. So anyway, the Octavian wins the Battle of Actium, and he comes back, and now he is the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, Octavian. And he changes his name, or he doesn't change his name, but they begin to deify him, basically. And he takes upon himself a couple of titles. One is Imperator. Imperator. Another one means the first citizen of Rome, but and the last one is Augustus, and Augustus is a title of deity. He basically becomes a god. The people make him a god, and Octavian comes in and begins a series of reforms that is going to basically lead to 200 years of incredible peace throughout all the Roman Empire. You know what? Isn't it unbelievable that you can get one wise leader and then you can have 20 jerks come after him? And just the blessings of the wisdom of that previous leader will overflow for many generations. It's an incredible thing. And that's what happens with Octavian, because I'm going to tell you something. After Augustus come the four Julio-Claudian emperors. I probably ought to give you their names. The four Julio-Claudian emperors. These guys are losers. Except with the possible exception of Claudius, uncle, who stuttered. Now, after Augustus, I think that's about right. No, I don't think so. Well, something like that. There are the four Julio-Claudian emperors. Okay? Next, after Augustus, would be Tiberius. After Tiberius comes, oh boy, ready for this? Little Boots. Caligula. He's a bad boy. Made his horse a senator. He was out of his mind. Made his horse a senator. Made all the aristocrats. He forced all the aristocrats to make their wives become prostitutes for one night to raise money for the Roman Empire. Because I'm telling you what. By the way, he got killed by his own bodyguards, and his head went rolling down about 60 stairs. And you know what? Not one tear was shed. He carried on an incestuous relationship with his sister, was intensely afraid of the dark, of any kind of variation in the weather. He was afraid of the dark. He was afraid of thunder, lightning, rain, any kind of phenomenon like that. The man was out of his mind. Some of the most brutal rituals and perverted things happened during his reign. I mean, the guy really thought that he was a god and could do anything. And he basically did anything he wanted to. Men in the amphitheater, in the Colosseum, would be buried up to their necks, and complicated machinery would come and gently hack off their necks like that, little by little. The man was out of his mind. By the way, if you want to read the gory details, there's a Roman historian who lived later than these guys who wrote a book called The 12 Caesars. You can get it in any college bookstore. It's called, the guy's name is Suetonius. Oh boy, You're going to ask me to spell it S-U-S-W-A-D-T-O-N-E-S, something like this. The 12 Caesars. C-A-E. C-A-E-S-A-R-R-S. The 12 Caesars. What's that?
That movie Caligula wasn't that far off then, huh?
I never saw the movie. Yeah. Well, I heard that it was a... Yeah, I never seen it. But it probably was. One thing that I heard about the movie is there's a lot of sexual content in the movie that makes it... I thought it was X-rated. You had asked me that, too. But the thing is, the only difference would have been, if it were actually true, is that it would have been almost all homosexual. It would have been almost all homosexual, because this was the big thing with this guy. I mean, he was just out of his mind. The more perverted, you cannot imagine an act of perversion that was not accomplished by this man. Gaius Caligula Caesar, little boots, that's what his name means. After him, who am I forgetting? Oh, Uncle Claudius. Uncle Claudius. Claudius was a stammering old... you'll never be anything, Claudius. He ended up being the best of the four. Anybody ever see I, Claudius? The great PBS series that was on? Oh, if you ever get a chance to see it, I have it taped. It's like 12 parts. Have you seen it? Absolutely magnificent. It's great. It's called I, Claudius. And the books are great, too. And what it is it's Claudius's reflections of his ancestors and how they come up and the murder and the treachery that goes on during these guys and how he's a stammer. Claudius, come over here. And he can't talk. He's got a stammering tongue. But he's absolutely brilliant with the books, and he's a kind and a fair man. And so he becomes the greatest of the Claudio-Julian emperors. The last of them, the Julio-Claudian emperors, the last of them is our old buddy, who? Nero. Oh, my goodness. That man is frying in the pit of hell right now, where he will be for all eternity for what he did to the Church of Jesus Christ. Absolutely unbelievable. Christians were used as candles to light his garden. He literally, it was during his reign that Paul and Peter were both executed. The man is absolutely... Oh, by the way, Tiberius, it was during his reign that the crucifixion took place. The crucifixion, the resurrection, and the ascension of Christ took place during his reign. It was during Augustus Caesar's reign that the Lord Jesus Christ was brought into... Mary had to go with Joseph into Bethlehem, where the Lord Jesus Christ was born in his humanity. It was during a decree by Augustus for a census that would be taken. Because that's one of the decrees that Augustus made that brought in 200 years of peace. One thing he did was he made taxes very fair. And the way he did that was, before it would be incredibly corrupt, where are your taxes? How much are they? How much do you have? $8. They're $8.05, but we'll let you go. You know, that kind of thing. After Julius Caesar, there was when Augustus Caesar comes in, he makes a census, and the census is going to make taxes very fair and equitable among all people. Another thing that he does is he begins a building project of roads. The roads are very important. One of your questions is how. Let me answer that question for you right now. One of the questions is explain how the Roman Empire paved the way for the Lord Jesus Christ and the rapid spread of Christianity, and this is basically what's going on with that. Because during Augustus Caesar, the empire, number one, was so huge, it was very big, it made it very easy for Christianity to spread throughout all the empire. You see what I mean? Because it was all one empire, not separate countries. All right, that's one thing. Another thing is a system of roads was built that was so intense and so good that some of them still exist today. The original roads that were built by the Romans still exist today. Not only that... if you look at the missionary journeys of Paul, you know what? All he did was follow the roads. If you take a map of the Roman roads and where they go, you'll see they go everywhere that Paul went. All he did was follow the Roman roads. Another thing, because of the system of law and order and law that was instituted in these early stages of the Roman Empire that brought in the Pax Romana, because of this, men were no longer afraid to walk on these roads, even with large amounts of money, because there were no more robbers or thieves like there were in the Roman Republic. It was a very big problem. Pirates everywhere. Thieves waiting behind every rock to rip you off. And do you remember Paul? Remember that huge offering that he took? Remember 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and chapter 9? When he's taking this huge offering, it was for the church of Jerusalem, wasn't it? Who were being persecuted. He goes up and he gives them a fortune. He carried all that by hand from the various churches and offerings that were taken, and he brought it to the church of Jerusalem. Now, let me tell you something. That would not have happened during the Roman Republic. So these are just a few things of how the Roman Empire set up. And not only that, because all of these nations were absorbed in the Roman Empire, you could go all the way from where? Syria, Palestine, all the way to Italy, Spain, Gaul, and you're still in the Roman Empire. Another thing, because of the law that was in place, you had if you were a Roman citizen, you were protected by the law anywhere you went. You were protected. You see what I mean? Because you were a Roman citizen. So all of these things had infinitely great things to do with the rapid spread of Christianity. Everybody understand that question and the answer? Okay. Okay, so basically you have, and we're going to have to wrap this up. You know what? We're going to have to cut something tonight, I think. Let's go on to this. Let me just say this, okay? There's a series of emperors that come after, which are known as the Flavian emperors. They're basically three emperors. Vespasian is the first one, and his two sons. Vespasian, Titus, and Domitian. If you know anything about church history, Domitian will ring a bell. He was another tough guy with the church. Okay, so the Flavian emperors come in. They build the Flavian amphitheater, the huge amphitheater. That's part of the Flavian Empire. The biggest thing about the Flavian emperors is it's during that time that Jerusalem is sacked in 70 AD. Jerusalem is sacked and burned, surrounded, burned. Women are actually eating their own children, and men are eating their own children just to stay alive because they basically starved to death because the whole city's been isolated. Vespasian starts the siege. He is replaced by his son Titus because when he becomes the emperor in 70 AD. So those guys are important for that. After that, from the years 96 to 180 AD, there's what are known as the five good emperors. Nerva is the first one. Trajan is the second one. Hadrian is the third one. Antonius Pius is the fourth one. And Marcus Aurelius is the fifth one. Don't ask me to repeat it. I'm not doing it. I don't care. No, I'm only kidding. The first one is Nerva, the five good emperors. The reason they're called good emperors is because they basically leave the church alone. Okay? Nerva, number one. N-E-R-V-A. Trajan, number two. T-R-A-J-A-N. By the way, he's the one that built that massive pillar. If you know anything about art history, there's a huge column called the Column of Trajan that is all engraved upon it. It's magnificent. Number three is Hadrian. Hadrian is the guy, H-A-D-R-I-A-N. He's the guy that builds the wall. You know Hadrian's Wall on the British in Britain? The wall that goes, what is it, Scotland? And huge wall that he built over there. And then Antonius Pius is the fourth one. A-N-T-O-N-I-U-S P-I-U-S. And number five is Marcus Aurelius. And I'm sure you've heard of him before. M-A-R-C-U-S. And it's A-U-R-E-L-I-U-S. Marcus Aurelius is a very famous philosopher. He wrote the book The Meditations. And he was a Stoic philosopher. And, you know, a lot of thought. And, you know, mellow guy. After him, there's an imbecile that comes to the throne, his son Commodus. Commodus comes to the throne. He's an absolute fool. He's extremely conceited. He says that the Roman Empire should be called Commododia. He basically turns it into a big calm mode. He liked executions, and the only way that the church even survived under Commodus at all is because he had a girlfriend by the name of Marcia, M-A-R-C-I-A. Marcia. And Marcia was sympathetic towards the Christians, and she gave him a break. And she talked him into being sympathetic, letting some of the Christians out of the death camps that they were in. And that's what they were death camps. Okay? Now, Constantine comes on the scene. You know, bear with me just a few more minutes and we're going to be done with the empire, folks, okay? Constantine comes on the scene. I know this is like overload, right? Are you guys in overload right now? No? How many are? Okay. I'm sorry. Listen, just all I can say is maybe you can grab the tape or something, or I can, I don't know what else I can do. How else are you going to teach the Roman Empire in an hour and a half, you know? Think of it this way. The Claudio-Julian emperors, the Flavian emperors, which are the three, Vespasian, Titus, and Domitian. And then you have the five good emperors. After there, it's downhill. It's all downhill. After 180, it is downhill from there. It's one fool after another takes the throne. Okay? But then we come to Constantine. And Constantine is supposedly the first Christian emperor. You've all heard of Constantine before, right? Okay, Constantine is, one day he's looking up at the sky and he sees a gigantic cross in the sky. This is the way that he at least what he told Eusebius, the great church historian. Saw a giant cross in the sky, and written on the cross were the words, "Conquer by this." Conquer by this. And then he had another dream in which he was told to bring the cross with him in battle everywhere he went, and he would be victorious. So now he begins what's very important about Constantine is during his reign he signs what is called the Edict of Milan. The Edict of Milan is a very important, one of the most important documents in all of ancient history. And it grants religious freedom to all religions in the Roman Empire. So he doesn't outlaw Christianity. He doesn't outlaw every religion but Christianity. The Edict of Milan, and a lot of people take it to mean that, and it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that he's saying from now on we are a Christian nation. He was the first Christian emperor. Yes, he was a Christian himself. But the Edict of Milan said anybody can practice their religion, which means the church too, and how glad they must have been of it, because they went through some incredible persecutions, which we'll study in the closing moments that we have. Okay? The Edict of Milan. Also, Constantine, after Constantine, Theodosius comes. Theodosius, I think it's like that. My spelling may be wrong, but it's something like that. That's an O. I think it's like that. But Theodosius the first comes, and he makes Christianity the official religion of the Roman Roman Empire. Okay. Now, a couple more things, and we're going to close this section. And I think, you know what? I think we're going to have to miss the movie. Well, I'll give you guys that choice after. We'll take a little vote, and we can either see the movie or we can do the lecture on the rise of Christianity, whichever one you want. You have the handout on the rise of Christianity, so I'll just explain a concept or two from it, and you know, you can take the rest of it home if you like, and we can see the movie. Let me just finish this, okay? The barbarians. Now, the Roman Empire becomes so corrupt that the barbarians begin to take more and more land away from the Roman Empire. Who are the barbarians? Who knows where they're from?
Germany.
Germany. They're from Germany. Are they all one tribe?
No.
Absolutely not. There's the Vandals, the Ostrogoths, the Visigoths, the you name it. I have a little list of them here. They're the Ostrogoths, the Visigoths, the Vandals, the Franks, the Angles, and the Saxons. All of those tribes are in some way or form in Gaul at the time. And, of course, the Anglo-Saxons are also on the mainland of England, okay? So now, these tribes in various incarnations are going to come and attack the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was incredibly strong, but you know what? In 9 AD, the year 9 AD, there was a battle that was fought between the Germans. Let's call them the Germans because we're referring to all of them, but the ancient Germans, the barbarians. There was an ancient battle that was fought, and they so clobbered the Roman Empire that Rome never tried to extend itself over the Danube and Rhine rivers again. That's how intense of warriors they were. So, as Rome began to deteriorate, and as the people in Rome began more and more to You know what they did? They started liking the easy life. Let me tell you something about the barbarians, okay? The barbarians had very few luxuries, number one. They lived simple lives, very simple lives, very few luxuries. They, you know what? You know who was their king? You know who was their leader? The best warrior. The best warrior in the tribe was the leader. Number two, they drank alcohol in insane amounts. That's all we can say. They knew how to quaff the ale, as they say. They drank an incredible amount of alcohol, and they would frequently beat one another to death during their drinking bouts, the fights that they would have. They were incredibly cruel people. They practiced exposure, which we studied with the Greeks. They would leave their babies, who were seen to be weak, remember that, in Sparta? They would leave them out and expose them. Okay, so they went one better, and they literally took the old people, they would depossess them of their clothing and expose them to the weather. And obviously the people were old and frail and could not exist. Okay, so that's another thing about them. Next, they had false gods, and you know what? We get a lot of our calendar, unfortunately, from their false gods. Some of their false gods were Sunna, the sun god. S-U-N-N-A was their sun god. And that's what we get the word Sunday from Sunna. Also, Wudan, W-O-D-E-N, Wudan, was the god of wind, the wind god. And that's what we get Wednesday from. And Thor, T-H-O-R, is obviously the god of thunder, the lightning bolt, right? The god of thunder or the sky god, and that's what we get Thursday from. Thor's day. Not Thursday, it's Thor's day. Okay. By the mid 400, the German attacks, the attacks of the German tribes had. Are you ready for this now? The German attacks from like this area on, this whole area, the German attacks had basically shoved the Roman Empire back to the Italian peninsula. Can you believe that? You know what had happened? Rome lost its will to fight. Rome no longer cared to fight. Remember Vietnam? Anybody? Remember, make love, not war, man. I'm burning my draft card, man. It doesn't matter, man. Baby killers, man. Remember that stuff? You know what happened? America stopped. Was anybody here alive during... No. You, Tony, I bet you were. When they bombed Pearl Harbor. Were you in World War II?
No.
Oh, you were too young, right? Okay, when World War II, and it, you know, talk to some of your older family members, they will tell you one thing. I have an Uncle Jerry who I love to death, and he was in World War II, and you know what he tells me? He said when it came over the radio that Pearl Harbor had been bombed, he said men could not run down to the recruiting station fast enough. There were lines going around the block. They didn't even want to hear it. Pearl Harbor's been bombed. Put me to work. Put me to work for my country. And people were coming home saying, Mom, I joined the Army. You know what? It was that kind of intense American pride. You know what? We had integrity back in the 40s, folks. We don't have that same kind of integrity today. I mean, you know what we do? We have a war and we throw a party, Woodstock. Let's see if Jimi Hendrix can come and play for us, the Star Spangled Banner. Woo! Far out. You know what I mean? That's what it was like. I mean, we lost our integrity in that short period of time between 1942 and 1969. It went... Now, yeah, you know what? It must have been good dope, because they lost their minds completely.
My wife lost their brother, 24 years old, got shot right through the head in France.
Mm.
My brother was a prisoner of war, their father.
Is that right?
He got shot, three holes right here. And they beat him. He left the house. He was 195 pounds. Well, he's close to 6 feet, your father.
Yep.
He come back, and it's so funny, I told my mother, he was a prisoner of war. But for a long time, we didn't know if we were dead or alive. And I told my mother that night, Mom, Joe's coming home tonight. My mother said, you're crazy. And my father went to close the door when he come in from work. I don't think, would you open that door? I said, Joe's coming home tonight. He said, "Is it better before you go to bed? Go to bed before I give you a pat up, watch these back at." So I went to bed. father, but once he went into his room, I opened the door again. And the shoe got made up. 12 o'clock, I looked, it was a taxi. He come in 119 pounds.
Wow.
His eyes was a mirror. I smiled. I'm not going to sleep with him. Because all the boys slept in one.
Hmm?
He said, no, he might murder me because they killed, you know.
Yeah.
And he showed me.
Well,
you want to see what they did to his back.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But back then, you know what? You talk to these men, and they have an incredible pride about what they did and what they accomplished for this country. You know what? Just like we are about to be overtaken by the barbarians, so was Rome. They were ripe for it. They lost their resolve. You know what? They failed the prosperity test. They did okay in adversity when they had to fight and scrape to get ahead. But you know what? Once they had everything, you had idiots like Caligula. Who thought they were God. Man got so powerful that they thought they were God. You know, they actually probably got... they didn't get so insane that they actually thought that they could legislate whether or not to take the life of a child medically, legally, and pay for it with a national health care policy. They didn't get that corrupt. It takes Americans to do that. So listen, the Roman Empire was on its way down, folks. And why did it all fall? Well, a couple of things. First of all, prices went up, 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 up. Prices went up on everything. Number two, taxes went up with it. Taxes went up, 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 up. The economy was ridiculous. You know another problem that our government has not learned, that the Roman government didn't know either? And that was this. When you have a problem, handle it with a bigger government. The bureaucracy in Rome was not to be believed. It was huge. It was gigantic. It was almost as big as the American bureaucracy. Yeah, they were exactly. That's, you know, that was Ronald Reagan's whole thing. You know, the Constitution was framed by people who wanted a small government.